We've all been there. That feeling, right? You dive into some powerful new tool, maybe like NAN, and you've got this big vision, all the amazing automations you're going to build. But then, you know, the tutorials just keep coming. The docs seem endless. You're sort of swimming in information, but you're not actually building anything, anything that creates real value anyway.
Yeah, you get stuck in what people call tutorial hell. It's really common.
It is. You spend so much time learning about the tool, you kind of forget to just use it.
Right.
Exactly. So what if we could just bypass all that overwhelm? What if instead of feeling like you've got to master, what, over 1,000 NENN nodes, you could just focus on the crucial ones?
The essentials.
Yeah, the essentials. That's what we're exploring today. We're going to unpack this 80-20 approach to NENN. We're going to show you that really just 14 nodes are pretty much all you need for like 80% of professional automation workflows.
Mm-hmm.
This is our deep dive into getting you out of tutorial hell, shifting your mindset, you know, from being this eternal student to actually being an effective builder.
And this isn't just theory, you know. It's a system that's been tested, refined through tons of real-world automations. Once you really get your head around these core pieces, the possibilities just explode. It really opens things up.
Okay, so to help us navigate this, we've kind of grouped these 14 nodes into five main categories. You can think of them like fundamental skill trees if you want to become a real N8N power user.
Yeah, good way to put it.
So we'll start with the execution essentials.
Yeah.
The basic physics of N8N. So we'll hit the basic triggers, universal data processing, how to connect with connectivity and APIs, and then finally bringing in some AI.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, let's start right at the foundation, what we're calling the laws of the N8 universe, the execution essentials. Because before you even drag one node out of that canvas, you kind of need to understand the basic rules, how N8N actually works.
Absolutely.
Missing these five core ideas, well, that's where like 99% of beginner frustration comes from. It's like trying to build a skyscraper without understanding gravity.
That's a great analogy. So the first law is what we can call the law of gravity. It's all about flow, direction, and order. Just imagine data in NENN is like water.
Okay.
It always flows left to right and top to bottom, always. It's a one-way street. You can't make it go backwards.
Right.
And here's a key thing. If your workflow splits into different paths, maybe using an IF node or something, the top path always runs completely first, start to finish, before the next path down even begins.
Okay. So that guarantees the order, even if things look parallel.
Exactly. It ensures that predictable order, which is super important when things get complicated with branching.
So knowing that flow left to right, top to bottom, that really sets the stage. Okay. What's the next sort of fundamental law here?
Next up is the one thing at a time law. Sequential execution. Think of your NEN workflow like a super focused chef, maybe a chef with only two hands.
Mm.
It prepares one dish, one task, one node completely before it even thinks about starting the next one. Even if you have branches that look like they're side by side, node A has to finish its entire job before node B kicks off.
So it's not really true parallel processing then, not in the way some might think.
Nope. It's very deliberate, very sequential. Understanding this is key for timing, you know, figuring out how long things will take. Your total workflow time is basically the sum of each step, one after the other.
Got it. Sequential. What's next?
And then we have the assembly line law. Some call it the one per input rule. Now, this one is critical for managing costs, especially when you're using outside services like AI.
Okay. Costs. Important.
Yeah. Every node is like a station on an assembly line. It does its job once for every single item that arrives on its input.
Once per item.
Right. So say you have one data object, like a JSON object, and inside it, there's a list of 500 new leads. If you send that single box of leads to an AI node, that AI node runs just once.
Okay. It sees it as one job.
Exactly. But if you first split those 500 leads into 500 separate items and then send them to the AI node, yeah, that AI node runs 500 times.
Whoa. Imagine the cost difference there. If you accidentally process 500 individual items instead of one batch, that's where costs could really, really add up fast.
That's precisely it. Those details matter hugely for the bottom line. Okay, law number four, the choose your own adventure law. This is all about branching with conditions.
Making decisions.
Exactly. An N8N workflow isn't just a straight road. You've got nodes like IF and switch. These are the points where your data gets to make choices. They allow for that dynamic if this, then that kind of logic.
Makes sense.
So you can build smarter systems that react differently. Like maybe if a new customer spends over, say, $500, their info goes down a special VIP onboarding path.
Right.
Or maybe a support ticket comes in. And if it contains keywords like urgent or billing, it gets routed straight to a specialized team.
Right. That branching really opens up the customization. Okay, what's the last law that kind of ties these basics together?
The final one is the safety switch law. That's the active inactive toggle. Every single N8N workflow has this crucial switch, usually up in the top right corner of the editor.
Okay.
By default, it's set to off inactive. This is your safe zone, your development sandbox. The workflow will only run if you manually click that test workflow button.
Right, for building and testing.
Precisely. But when you're ready, you flip that switch to on-on. Now it's active, it's live. It'll actually start listening for its real-world triggers like that schedule you set or an incoming webhook. It's the absolute final step before anything goes into production.
That makes sense. It's the master switch. So thinking about all these foundational laws, if I'm just starting out, which one should I really be most mindful of, especially regarding, say, efficiency or cost?
Oh, the assembly line law for sure. That one directly controls how many times your nodes run based on the data items.
Got it. The assembly line law. Okay, so we've got the basic physics down. Now let's talk about how these automations actually, you know, start. The starting pistols, your basic trigger nodes.
Right. Every automation needs a starting point, a kickoff. And these three essential triggers, they'll cover almost anything you need to build.
Okay, what's the first one?
First is the manual trigger. Think of this as the lab switch. Mm-hmm. This is your absolute best friend during development and testing. It's like that big red button in a science lab, you know, lets you run the experiment whenever you want.
On demand.
Yeah. Its only job is manual execution. You click it, it runs, you get instant feedback. Vital for checking your logic, seeing how data transforms, without waiting for some real event to happen. You'll probably click this button hundreds, maybe thousands of times while you're building.
So it's really about that quick iteration, that immediate feedback loop.
Exactly that. Then you've got the schedule trigger, or you could call it the alarm clock.
Okay.
This is your workhorse for any time-based automation. Super simple, super powerful. It's basically an alarm clock for your workflows. You tell it when to run every hour, every day, at 8 a.m., first Monday of the month, whatever.
Perfect for routine stuff.
Totally. Sending daily reports, weekly data backups, processing monthly invoices, all that recurring stuff.
Makes sense. And what about when something happens outside of NAN, like in another app, that my workflow needs to react to?
Ah, that's where app event triggers come in. Or the motion detector, if you like. These are key for building really smart reactive automations.
Reactive, okay.
Yeah, instead of your workflow having to constantly ask another app, anything new, which is called polling, and it's kind of inefficient.
Yeah.
These triggers just sit there and wait patiently. They wait for the other app to send a signal to NAN.
Ah, so the app tells NN.
Right. The workflow only runs when something has actually happened. It's way more efficient. Think like a new row gets added to a Google Sheet or a specific email lands in your Gmail inbox.
That sounds much smarter, yeah. Less wasteful. Okay, so for someone just starting, which trigger is really their best friend? Where should they begin?
Oh, the manual trigger, definitely. It's your go-to for all testing and building.
Manual trigger, got it. Okay, now we're getting into a really core section, the heavy machinery, universal data processing.
Mm-hmm. The factory floor.
Right. This is really the heart of NAN, isn't it? Where the actual transformation happens.
Mm-hmm.
Mastering these, what, seven heavy machinery nodes? This is what lets you take that messy raw data and turn it into something clean, structured, and actually valuable.
Absolutely. First up is the log splitter. That's the split out node.
Log splitter. Okay.
It takes a single item, maybe one that has a list of things inside it, technically an array, and it breaks that list apart into multiple individual items.
Uh-huh.
One item for each thing in the original list.
Why would you do that?
Super useful if you need to do something with each item individually. Like imagine you have a spreadsheet list of people. You use split out to get one item per person, so you can then send each one a personalized email.
Okay. Process them one by one, and if you need to put them back together.
That's where the data blender comes in the aggregate node. It does the exact opposite of split out. It takes a whole stream of individual items and combines them back into one single item that contains a consolidated list of all of them.
So they're like a pair.
Very often, yeah. You split data out, do something to each piece, then you aggregate the results back together, maybe into a summary report or something.
Got it. Split and aggregate, like breathing in and out with data.
Yeah, kind of like that. Okay, next is the data janitor. This is the edit fields node, or sometimes called the set node. This one is your absolute workhorse. You'll use this constantly.
Janitor, huh? cleans things up.
Totally. It's for cleaning, transforming, reorganizing your data, anything really. Combine a first name and last name field into a full name. Format dates so they're all consistent. Make sure phone numbers look the same. Get rid of fields you don't need to keep things tidy.
Sounds incredibly versatile. Like you can really sculpt the data.
It really is. Okay, next, the bouncer. That's the IF node.
Like at a club.
Sort of. It's for simple binary decisions. Yes or no. True or false. It looks at each piece of data, checks it against one condition you set, and then sends it down one of two paths. The true path if it meets the condition, the false path if it doesn't.
Simple split. True, false. Got it. But what if the decision is more complex, like more than just two options?
Right. For that, you need the train conductor. That's the switch node.
Train conductor.
Yeah, think of it like the IF node's more powerful sibling. It's perfect when you have more than just two possible outcomes. It acts like a conductor at a big station, looks at a specific value in your data, and routes that whole train of data down one of many different tracks based on that value.
Okay. Multiple routes.
Exactly. Really good for things like categorizing support tickets based on their type, or maybe processing orders differently depending on the country they came from. It's much cleaner and easier to manage than trying to chain a bunch of IF nodes together.
Yeah, I can see how nested IFs could get messy fast. Okay, so IF and switch send data down different paths. How do you bring those paths back together?
Good question. That's where the Railyard switchman comes in, the merge node.
Switchman, okay. Right.
It's the essential partner to IF and switch. If your switch node sent trains down three different tracks, the merge node sits at the end, patiently waits for all three of those branches to finish whatever they were doing, and then it combines the data from all of them back into a single unified stream moving forward.
So it waits for everyone and brings it all back together. Ensures nothing gets lost.
Exactly. Ensures continuity. Okay, one more in this section. What about those really tricky data transformations? The ones where none of the standard nodes seem to quite cut it?
Yeah, the weird edge cases.
For those, you have the get out of jail free card, the code node.
Uh-oh, code. Sounds intimidating.
It can seem that way at first, yeah. But it's your ultimate fallback. Your solution for any complex data wrangling that the other nodes just can't handle easily. But here's the secret. You don't actually need to be a programmer to use it effectively these days.
Really?
Well, AI. I mean, I still wrestle with prompt drift myself sometimes, you know? That's when you're asking an AI to do something and its answers start kind of wandering away from what you originally wanted. It happens.
Yeah, I've seen that.
But using something like ChatGPT to help write the little snippets of JavaScript for the code node, it's been a total game changer for me and for lots of people. You just describe what you need in plain English, maybe give it an example of your input data and what you want the output to look like.
And it writes the code.
Often, yeah.
Yeah.
Or gets you 90% of the way there. You copy it, paste it into the code node, and suddenly you've got this custom transformation without writing a line of code yourself.
Wow, that actually makes it sound really accessible. That's empowering. Okay, thinking about all these data tools, IF, switch, merge, code, which one is really the best bet for handling those complex decisions with many possible outcomes?
Definitely the switch node. It's built to efficiently route data down many different tracks based on conditions.
Switch node. Got it. Midroll sponsor Reed Placeholder. Welcome back. We've covered the fundamental laws, the triggers, the heavy machinery for data processing. Now let's get into category four, the gates to the world. This is all about connectivity and APIs.
Mm-hmm. Connecting N8N to everything else.
Right. These nodes are basically your passport. They let your N8N workflows talk to, send data to, receive data from pretty much any other application or service on the internet.
And top of the list here is the librarian on demand. That's the HTTP request node.
Okay.
This one, honestly, it might be the single most powerful node in all of N8N. It's your universal connector, your key to the whole digital kingdom, really.
High praise. What does it do?
Its main job is to reach out to any service on the internet that offers an API. An API is just like a specific menu of commands that lets different software talk to each other.
Right, the application programming interface.
Exactly. So you use this node to either GET data, like pull information from another service, or POST data, like send information to another service. Once you get comfortable with this node, you're basically never limited by the pre-built integrations N8N offers. If a service has an API, you can probably talk to it with this node.
That really does sound like it breaks down almost any barrier.
Oh.
Okay, but what if I need other services to contact my workflow to send data in?
Right. For that, you need the digital mailbox, the webhook node,
digital mailbox.
Yeah, it's pretty much the exact opposite of the HTTP request node. Instead of your workflow reaching out, this node creates a unique, special URL. It's like setting up your own private digital mailbox.
Okay.
Other services can then send data to that specific URL, and boom, it triggers your NEN workflow instantly. This is how you build those super reactive automations that kick off immediately when something happens elsewhere, like a payment completing in Stripe, or someone submitting a form on your website, or maybe a message hitting a specific Slack channel.
So it just sits there listening for incoming messages at that URL.
Got it. And when a message arrives, how do you, like, confirm you got it? Is there a digital handshake?
There is, and it's important. That's the delivery confirmation, the respond to webhook node.
Okay.
It's a simple node, but it's really crucial digital etiquette. When another service sends data to your webhook URL, it's often expecting a quick reply like, yep, got it, thanks. This node's whole job is to send that immediate Roger that message received signal back.
Why is that so important?
Well, it prevents the sending service from thinking the message failed. If it doesn't get that confirmation, it might try sending the same data again and again, which can cause chaos. So this little node helps make your integrations robust and reliable.
Makes sense. Prevents duplicates and errors. Okay, quick check. If I want my workflow to get data from pretty much any website or service out there, which node is my main tool?
The HTTP request node. That's your universal connector for grabbing data from the web. HTTP request. Okay. All right, we've reached our final category, the brains and the library. This covers AI and storage.
Mm-hmm. Adding intelligence and giving the data a home.
Exactly. These are the nodes that add that layer of judgment and then provide a reliable place to keep all the valuable data you've processed. Let's start with storage.
Okay. For storing data, we've got the librarian's filing cabinet. This really refers mostly to Google Sheets, but also other databases.
Filing cabinet. Well, makes sense.
Yeah, your automations need somewhere to put the final results, right? The processed data. Lots of options exist, but honestly, Google Sheets is usually the easiest, most user-friendly place to start.
Easy to see, easy to share.
Exactly, and easy to connect NAN to. Then, you know, as your needs get more complex, maybe you graduate, you might move up to something like Airtable, which is kind of like a database on steroids, or even a proper database like Supabase or Postgres, but the idea is the same. It's the organized library where all your valuable automated work ends up.
A structured home for the output.
Mm.
Okay. And what about adding the brains, the AI part, the AI brain trust?
Right. Now, the absolute key with AI in NAN is to use it intelligently. And by that, I mean use it only when you actually need human-like judgment or complex understanding.
Don't use it for simple stuff.
Exactly. Don't pay for an expensive AI model to, like, add two numbers together or format some text when a basic built-in node can do it better, faster, and for free. Use the right tool for the job.
Okay. So when do you use it? What are the types?
There are basically two main types of AI brains you'll use in AN. First is the specialist. This is your basic LLM chain node. Honestly, this node will handle probably 90% of the AI tasks you'll ever need.
A specialist. Okay.
Think of it as a highly focused expert. It's great for single-step specific jobs. Things like analyzing the sentiment of some text, is it positive or negative? Or extracting specific pieces of data from a paragraph, like names or dates. Or maybe doing basic classification, like figuring out what category an email belongs to.
So focused, specific AI tasks.
Exactly. Then you have the manager. This is the AI agent node.
The manager. Sounds more complex.
It is, and often more expensive to run, too. You should really only bring in the manager when you need an AI that can handle more complex scenarios. Like, maybe it needs to have an ongoing conversation where it remembers previous turns. Or maybe it needs to use several different tools, like searching the web, then summarizing, then saving the result to solve a multi-step problem.
Okay, so it's for more involved multi-step reasoning or tasks requiring memory. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So, quick question then. When should I choose the specialist AI versus the manager AI?
Yeah, good rule of thumb. Specialist for those focused single tasks. Manager for the complex multi-step problems, especially if they need memory or multiple tools.
Specialist for single tasks. Manager for complex problems.
Got it. Wow, this has been really clarifying. We've walked through these 14 essential NA nodes, broken them down into those five key categories. And what really stands out, I think, is that 80-20 rule in action. True mastery, it seems, isn't really about knowing every single one of those 1,000-plus nodes. It's about deeply understanding how to creatively combine these core 14.
Yeah, that shift in thinking, That's what takes you from being stuck in tutorial hell to actually being a professional builder, right?
Absolutely. These 14 nodes we've talked about today, they genuinely make up a complete toolkit. If you get comfortable with these, you really can tackle almost any automation challenge you're likely to face.
Okay, so here's the challenge for you listening. Your mission, should you choose to accept it. Stop watching the tutorials for a bit. Start building. Find one thing in your work or even your personal life that's repetitive, maybe a bit painful, something you dread doing manually.
Yeah, find that pain point.
Exactly. Then try to map out a simple solution for it using only the nodes we talked about today, just these 14.
Mm-hmm.
Then build it, test it, and definitely break it.
Yeah. Throw messy real-world data at it. See where it fails. That's how you learn.
For sure. Find the breaking points, then iterate. Improve it.
Right.
And then launch it. Put it into action. See how it performs in the real world and keep learning from that.
And just remember, the real power, the real creativity, it doesn't come from knowing 1,000 tools superficially. It comes from knowing how to combine a few essential tools in really smart ways. And this deep dive, it's given you that complete essential toolkit.
Couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
My pleasure. Until next time. Out to your own music.